An article written by well-known journalist Robert Lang, who was at one stage the personal finance editor of the Sunday Times, shows that retirement transitions can be bewildering, even for the well-informed. It was published in Business Day and brought to my attention by Dave Crawford of Planning Retirement, our regular retirement raconteur. Dave, as always, good to see you.
And you, Michael.
No such thing as a stress-free guide to retirement, which was the title of the article. It does expose just how difficult it is to navigate one's way through the transition. And I'm not trying to take a dig at Mr. Lang here, but it does indicate that for someone who's even relatively well-informed, this can be a process full of mines.
This is exactly my point. And one of the images that I use when I teach people is we talk about the maze, the retirement maze. Because you're standing in the maze, the walls are, go back to Harry Potter, the walls are high. You can't see what's on either side. You have to move to each decision. And how are you guided in making that decision? Where is the kind of framework that you would have if you were buying a car or or just about anything else? You have a kind of a framework in your mind through your broad education, social education, as well as a lot of things you've kind of learnt at school and that have stuck to you. But there's absolutely no background. So it's almost as though your skin is peeled off. You are just completely exposed and it's difficult. And so you go for guidance where you see what you think is someone or something that you can trust. But you may, my father always used to say to me, just remember, decide in haste. Repent at leisure.
But he does say, to use that analogy of the maze, that you are shuffled off like lambs to the slaughter almost. So within that maze analogy, probably into the abattoir, if you don't know what you're doing when it comes to what you need to select. There are some questionable assumptions made that perhaps the difference between a life annuity and a living annuity are not quite fully understood.
Yeah, look, that's what gave me quite a surprise because I thought at least those distinctions were pretty, were pretty straightforward. But it's been a huge wake-up call for me to read the article. Robert did a few things that I thought were excellent, and he pointed to a lot of conflicts of interest.
Let's start with what you thought was excellent.
What, in here?
Yeah.
His call for education. I thought that was amazing. I thought that the article ends where he says, all people need to be educated about what their options are on retirement.
Here. You've written an article on MoneyWeb recently.
Yes,
calling for it to become a life skill.
We should be teaching
it in schools.
And it's interesting because several companies that I work for, we work from the training department. And these guys hold me up to the light and they look underneath and they check what I'm teaching. And so in some cases they bring in, they'll send it off to somebody for due diligence. I teach at one of the universities and their tax department has checked my stuff. Their actuarial department has checked my stuff. So I can stand up and say, this is the real stuff. And so I've been through, and I go through regularly a due diligence process. So from that point of view, it's cool. But what is missed out of, and I think that's where I think that's where this issue arises, where these misconceptions arise, because there are a lot of myths in the industry.
Well, I mean, Robert, he starts by stating that under South Africa's pension laws, you can take only a third of your pension as cash immediately,
yes,
provided this doesn't come to more than 500,000. That just isn't true.
That's not right. That's just wrong. I mean, I don't know where that comes from, except that you have that initial 500,000 tax-free, provided, of course, you haven't retired or withdrawn or been retrenched
earlier on.
So it needs qualification. And that leads you to these kind of issues. So it's awkward. What interested me, though, was where the 1.5 million came from.
Where did that come from? Because I saw that later on in the article. The remaining two-thirds or more if your pension is more than 1.5 million.
Yes.
I wasn't aware of the threshold.
I went through this with Mike Stowe because he's got a lovely sense of humor and he's very quick to get to the numbers. And he said he thinks the 1.5 million...
Which actuary isn't.
Yeah, but what he thought was that it was multiplying the 500,000 by three.
But where in the law does it say three
times?
No,
it doesn't. That's the whole point. There's absolutely nothing here. What disturbed me most, though, was the assertion that if you didn't put the money in a pension, it would be added to your income and taxed at your maximum marginal rate. that is completely wrong. It's just wrong. The taxation on lump sums is handled in the second schedule to the Income Tax Act. So it's not treated in terms of paragraph 1M, which is the definition of gross income, thereby therefore taxable income. So it's a misconception. And I just wonder, I mean, if the man has retired, did he go through all of this? Or were these just warnings issued by people who were ignorant to... I find it very difficult. But it says to me that I have to be much more careful in teaching, that my what I write is more explicit, and I've got to pay a lot more attention to checking knowledge as we raise an issue and check it. Mm. Because, and we should be looking much more diligently at the printed matter that is available.
And semantics are important here. When the difference between life and living may appear small, but they're two completely, vastly different products.
Totally different
product. One guaranteed, the other not. One loaded with commissions, the other not.
Yeah.
And I think that was a glaring mistake.
It was a hell of a mistake. But more than that, the idea that most advisors sell life annuities, I have no idea where it came from. Now, luckily, it's been one of my pet things, the skewing of the product because of the way in which commissions are paid. And so I have the figures. I think I've shown you the True South reports before.
Yeah, it's frightening.
So 91% of assets in the year ending June 2017 of retiring people went into living annuities. That means 9% went into life annuities. So where do these conclusions come from?
And there is no way that if you look at our savings habits, if you look at the recent Alex Forbes Member Watch survey, that there are enough people saving with enough in the retirement pot for 90% of them to be going into living annuities. They're great products if you've got enough to retire with.
Brilliant products. Brilliant product. But yes, if you don't have enough, the temptation is to say, because of the flexible withdrawal rates, the temptation is to say, at 6%, which is what I'd get for a guaranteed pension, that's too little to live on. So rather than say, I've got that much guaranteed pension, I need to do something about the shortfall in terms of working, whatever, they are saying, well, why don't we just take 14%? Because that'll give you the nice pension. In 5 or 6 years' time, you will be able to see that your capital is just about to go down for the third time with nothing left. But hey, who's worrying about that? So the temptation's terrible. I happened to be in the room the night the living annuity was launched. And I was watching financial advisors jumping out of their seats. It was the auditorium at UAL. Jumping out of their seats and literally waltzing. Because they, and several of them said to me, this is El Dorado. And I couldn't see that at the time. I just thought, because I take it very seriously, you know, more planning, be careful and so on. But things like the 4% rule and so on are starting to come. People are starting to talk about it, starting to come through.
Mm.
But it still doesn't help with financially unsophisticated people who think, well, maybe, you know, we should just push that up a bit because we're having a, you know, next year looks hard, we're having a wedding, whatever.
And then try and keep up with inflation, throw that into the pot. And often, you know, I've had it put to me that, well, if you buy a life annuity, then you whatever you leave behind, you could walk out the door tomorrow and kill over. And then you're not leaving your heirs anything. And really, we should be quite...
It's untrue.
But I also think when it comes to retirement, Dave, and you've worked your whole life, I'm all for being quite self-serving in this. You're looking after yourself here. This isn't something to be planning around what you're going to leave to your children. Because the last thing you want to leave to your children is to have to look after you for another 10 or 15 years because you ran out of money in your living annuity.
The cases are legion. They're starting to stack up. We're starting to see them. And there is absolutely nothing to do. And what you say to somebody who says, well, actually, I've got 600,000 rand left for the rest of my life. I'm 67. And how much pension can I draw that will last me for the rest of my life? Well, a very quick calculation says 4% or let's say 5%, which is 30,000 a year. That's 2,500 a month. When you've been living at about 15 or 20 in order to get it into that position, I want to cry. I want to walk out of the room and just cry. You know, I look at the figures sometimes and I think maybe this is a bit like doing an IQ test where you have to say to the subject, I'm afraid your IQ is room temperature, you know. How do you give that kind of news? And how do you say to people, this is your responsibility, you've got to watch? Because the whole system says, and you sign it off when you purchase something like that, that you have been given enough information to make an informed decision. Now, one of the questions I get asked, I get three main questions now, and one of them says, how do I know what I don't know? Another one says, am I saving enough? And the third one says, how long will my money last? That's clearly. But if you bought a pension that offers guarantees, that gave you increases depending, you know, based on investment earnings, you've got a good chance of keeping a reasonable pace with inflation. But what you know, as a breadwinner, particularly if you have a spouse or a partner, is that as long as either of you draw breath, that pension will pay that income and it will rise. And we can see it. The provident funds, which the unions fought hard to get.
Yeah.
There's one, a large industrial company built a small village outside Brits. Out of all the people who, for their people who retired, and out of all the guys who moved there, only one of them had stayed on the old pension fund, old defined benefit pension fund. He literally supports the entire village. What happens to them when he dies, heaven only knows. That's crazy. But may I raise something else that I thought was quite interesting, and I'd like to have it said out loud, is that he talks about Regulation 28 and knowing that some can and some can't and all that sort of thing.
Mm.
Regulation 28 is meant to be a prudent set of guidelines. It says you can't have more than 75% in shares invested in your pension. Okay.
And limits to offshore and...
Yes. That's how much offshore money you can have and all the rest of it. But, and everybody sees that as a great limitation. I'm not sure that it's a terrible... Although there's some people who understand investment who do... There are a few actuaries I know who don't have pension funds because they want to be able to put everything offshore. But a post-retirement annuity, unless it's part of the pension fund, is not subject to Regulation 28 anyway, although they obey the guidelines. They tend to obey the guidelines. There's no fuss. I have a living annuity of my own which has 95% in equity. Purely accidentally, by the way. At the time, I needed the cash for something, and I had a small annuity, so I took $20,000. I think it was a tax bill, and I put $65,000 in a living annuity. I mean, imagine what most of these guys would do with $65,000; they wouldn't even talk to you. But the point is, it has grown. It's just been in equity. I've taken the minimum always.
Dave, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Mm. Always a pleasure. We could rattle on for the whole show. We have to have you back to talk about defaults because I see that those have been introduced, but not without their fair share of teething problems. No, there's an awful lot to talk about there.
That's
Dave,
great. Michael,
as
thank
always,
you very much.
Great
lovely
chatting
to, be
to
here.
You. Our regular retirement raconteur, Dave Crawford of Planning Retirement. Thanks for tuning in to the show tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Classic 1027 or at Fine Music Radio. We'll just follow the hashtag Classic Business. Saan Mohammed is up next for our Cape Town listeners, and in Gauteng, Carolyn Staines' Classic Wind Down. Good night.